Earlier this week, the nonprofit environmental disclosure group CDP came out with its first-of-a-kind ranking of cities working actively to combat climate change. New York, San Francisco, Boston, and Toronto received some of the highest scores out of nearly 600 cities worldwide for their actions on cutting emissions and crafting climate strategies. Our next guest says cutting emissions is only part of the story when it comes to dealing with the future of climate change. He's calling for Plan B, figuring out how to adapt to a changing environment. Roger Sejo is a senior fellow emeritus at the group Resources for the Future and the director of their Forest Economics and Policy Program. He's a shared recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize for his work on the IPCC Climate Report, and he's the author of the new book, Surviving Global Warming, Why Eliminating Greenhouse Gases Isn't Enough. Roger, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, you write that a lot of the focus, almost all the focus when it comes to global warming and climate change is in cutting greenhouse gas emissions. And you say that alone just isn't enough. Why is that?
Well, the point I develop in the book is the fact that even though the global community is striving to reduce greenhouse gases, their success is only questionable. We've tried to slam on the greenhouse gas brakes, if you will, but we haven't been very successful. And so if you look at the increase of greenhouse gases coming down the pike from various human activities, it's overwhelming our attempts to try to control it. So since the mitigation approach, stopping the greenhouse gas approach, is not being fully successful, we have suggested a Plan B, which stresses adaptation as a backup to, not an alternative for, but a backup to the current activities.
Right. I think sometimes the idea of saying, okay, we need to adapt to a reality of a warming world, sometimes people hear that and say, wait, so you're giving up? We're not going to try to mitigate it? You're saying a little from column A, a little from column B, it sounds like.
Well, we're saying continue column A just as we have, but we're just realistic here in the fact that it is not doing the job. It is not adequate. The mitigation activities are not adequate to stop the buildup of greenhouse gases and to control climate change, climate warming. So not a substitute for, but we're proposing a backup too. So we would have two kinds of activities addressing the climate change issue. One of those would be the addition of what I call adaptation.
Before we get to particular adaptations, you look back at the history of Earth's climate and point out that there are natural eras of climate change. Well before we had this boost in carbon emissions, we may be adding to that now. But are there lessons in how to adapt to our current climate change based on what we've seen in the past?
Well, one of the points of that discussion, looking at even in historic times, we've had situations of substantial global warming. And we also have, from scientific assessments of glaciers and what have you, additional evidence that we've had earlier global warming, and it's not related to greenhouse gases. So the whole warming phenomenon is multi-caused by activities both related to greenhouse gases, but obviously other activities, because we have examples of warming without the rise in greenhouse gases.
Talking to Roger Sejo about his new book, Surviving Global Warming, Why Eliminating Greenhouse Gases Isn't Enough. Let's get into some of the adaptations you're watching for, some of the things that'll change in a warming world. I'll start with one close to home here in Wisconsin. Roger, you write about agriculture. What kind of adaptations do you see needed in the world of farming?
Well, there are a variety of kinds of things that can be done. I mean, one of the most obvious is a change in the nature of the crop. If you have a warming and a drying, you might need to shift out of corn, for example, into one of the other grains, perhaps wheat, that is more successfully grown in a drier and warmer climate. Or in addition to changing the crop as such, there might even have to go to additional lands that were good for one purpose and not so good for the other in the climate of the time, and make the kind of adjustments. Basically, it's adaptation by using a changing crop or changing the provenance of the crop that you're using, basically making adjustments on land use in the agricultural sector. Also, you have the possibility now of breeding different kinds of characteristics into the seeds that are used for growing the crop. So that would be something that plant breeders could be involved in. And of course, they're doing things right now, but particularly with an eye toward the changing climate conditions and crops that would tend to be able to thrive in those new conditions under whatever the climate regime turns out to be.
One concern from some agricultural researchers I've talked to, Roger, is that, okay, yes, if there's a steady gradual increase from year to year, we can make that kind of change. But one problem might be the unpredictable things, an early warm and a late frost working together to ruin a crop, or a couple back-to-back years of flooding or back-to-back years of drought. Do you have thoughts on how to adapt to those more unpredictable extremes that might be more likely under climate change?
Yeah, well, that is an issue. We're moving into an area where we don't have experience, and so it would require a lot of alternatives. One approach might be to have a broader array of crops in a field, have perhaps smaller fields, but of different types of crops. So if it turns out to be particularly dry, some subset of your cropping can respond positively to that. One of the things about anticipated climate change is, although there's concern about drought and dryness, one of the expectations of a warmer climate is that we may have more precipitation. It may come, however, in the form of large downpours rather than gradual occasional rains. So there are obviously uncertainties here, and part of it is to recognize that there are uncertainties and make, if you will, small adjustments and adaptations and some sorts of, if you will, almost strategies in terms of dealing with a climate that you're not quite sure which direction it's going to move in. But I think the main thing is to be resilient here and opportunistic in terms of thinking ahead and managing your agricultural activities with the recognition of these climate change forces.
Talking to Roger Sejo from the think tank Resources for the Future. His new book is Surviving Global Warming While Eliminating Greenhouse Gases Isn't Enough. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want political leaders to do when it comes to trying to offset or adapt to climate change? And in your community, what do you think about, what do you worry about when it comes to the potential impacts of global warming? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our look at climate change and how humans might adapt to a warmer world. Roger Sejo is with us. His new book is Surviving Global Warming, Why Eliminating Greenhouse Gases Isn't Enough. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you worry about when it comes to the possible impacts of climate change? How do you want to see Wisconsin, the nation, the world try to adapt to changing conditions? Do you have a question for our guest? Call 800-642-1234. Roger, we just talked about agriculture. In your book, you cover a lot of issues, how to deal with rising sea levels for one, biodiversity, others. But in general, do you feel like there's enough attention being paid to the adaptation side of the equation when it comes to global warming?
Well, one of the purposes for writing the book was I did not think that that aspect of a response to climate change was being adequately dealt with. I do notice, however, that there seems to be more and more attention given to adaptation. I have sort of two dimensions or two facets that I stress on adaptation. One is the one that you just we just discussed, where we're talking about different kinds of management or adjusting our management, whether it's of our agriculture or whether it's of our seashores, where those areas are concerned about sea level rise. There are ways to anticipate and make adjustments for that. Basically, what we're trying to do is minimize the damages that would be associated with climate change. So that's one aspect of adaptation. Another aspect of adaptation would be to make adjustments to respond to the increase in greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. The traditional approach here that is being used is mitigation to try to get rid of those. The other one is to acknowledge that they are building up in the atmosphere and they are causing warming, and ask ourselves, are there things we can do to the atmosphere to change it enough to make it more, if you will, reflective in this case? Can we make changes in that atmosphere by adding different kinds of components to it? We know that after volcanoes, after large volcanoes, the whole climate of the Earth regularly cools for a couple or 3 years. And this is due to aerosols that the volcanic activity frees into the atmosphere. Now, this kind of thing can be mimicked, and there's a group at Harvard who's working on what kinds of aerosols could humans introduce in the atmosphere to change the reflectivity of the atmosphere and stratosphere enough to offset some of the warming that's occurred. There are other approaches being undertaken. The University of Washington is looking at the possibility of whitening of clouds. If we can make clouds whiter, more reflective, that could help in terms of offsetting some of the warming effects of the greenhouse gases. So there are a lot of other dimensions here that could be added to this, quote, fight against warming. And what I'm suggesting, and I think what's being now looked at in, with increasing effort, is the is some of those adaptative changes that would allow humans, together with the mitigation, to more successfully resist and adapt to any climate changes that would be forthcoming.
I want to bring on a caller now. Carl is with us in La Crosse. Carl, hi.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. You know, I see that although we have, you hear that our cities are getting more populated, I feel like we're also getting a lot more suburban growth, which is putting a greater demand on just our transportation use and basically creating in the way that we live a higher need for, you know, more miles per day to be driven. And I just wonder, is there a way that we can reduce the footprint that we're creating by basically living closer to where we work and trying to be a little bit more aware of our daily transportation use?
Carl, thanks for the call. Designing our way in part out of the problems. Roger, in our last couple of minutes, do you have thoughts on that?
Well, of course, there are different ways of doing that. One is to try to develop vehicles that do not release greenhouse gases or release fewer greenhouse gases. And we're talking about electric cars here, or other non-fossil fuel-driven approaches to transport. The other dimension of this is to change the configuration of our living areas so we have more centers of population that are close to the areas where they're working and what have you. That certainly makes sense, and I think there are attempts to try to do both of those. I think it's most obvious in terms of the movement toward electrical vehicles for transport, and you do see attempts to develop clusters of population within cities and to move out of the suburban kind of approach. So I think that those are all sensible kinds of things to do and moving in the right direction. And basically, my view is there's no silver bullet to this entire global warming problem. We're not going to solve it with one or two master strokes. Rather, there are going to be a whole lot of small activities that in concert collectively will have an effect and allow us both to mitigate the buildup of temperature.
And that's a good place to leave it. Thanks to Roger Sajo. His new book is Surviving Global Warming: Why Eliminating Greenhouse Gases Isn't Enough.